Yat. Which? Naha. Unto us. From you. Karma Sandhanam. Who strictly follow the fruit of ritualistic ceremonies according to Vedic injunctions. Sadhunam, who are honest, because we honestly seek elevated social standards and bodily comforts. Griha Medanam, although situated with a wife and children. Krita Vanasi, have created. Durmarsham, unbearable. Vipriyam, wrong. Tava, your. Marshatam, forgiven. Translation, although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Vishu Yajna, Pitru Yajna, and Ri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas or vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. So you can repeat. Although I live in household life, with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Ri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas or vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Prajapati Dasa wanted to prove that he had been most tolerant in not having said anything when Narada Muni, for no reason, induced his 10,000 innocent sons to adopt the path of renunciation. Sometimes householders are accused of being Grihamedis, for Grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihasthas, however, are different because although Grihasthas live in household life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement. Wanting to prove that he had been magnanimous to Narada Muni, Prajapati Daksha stressed that when Narada misled his first sons, Daksha had taken no action. He had been kind and tolerant. He was aggrieved, however, because Narada Muni had misled his sons for a second time. Therefore, he wanted to prove that Narada Muni, although dressed like a sadhu, was not actually a sadhu. He himself, although a householder, was a greater sadhu than Narada Muni. So, yannastam karma sandhanam sadhunam grihamedinam kritavannasi durmarsham vipriham tavamarshitam. So, omagana tamiranda shaganamjana shlakaya chakshur miritam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I found it quite interesting that in the translation here, then there's the word Griha Vrata, but in the Sanskrit you have this word Griha Medinam, which is a very interesting word in relationship to those who are materialistically attached to their families. Medi in Sanskrit means like a rod. And the reason that word rod is used is because in the old days, they would have the bulls go around in a circle. And the bulls were attached to the rod by a rope, and the rope was attached to their nose. So they keep going around in a circle. And as you know, when you go around in a circle, you don't get anywhere. But the reason they had the bulls going around in a circle is so the bulls could do different activities like thresh the rice and other things like that. There was a reason why human beings did that. But as far as from the bull's perspective, the bull was simply not accomplishing anything. He was simply tied by the nose. So this word griha medi means that someone who is a materialistic householder is tied by the nose, not so much the nose directly, that's a metaphorical statement, it's not that his wife takes him by his nose. That may happen sometimes, but, but I've never seen it. I've been in the Hare Krishna movement. But he's attached, you know, to the sensory enjoyment. I mean, one can blame the wife, say the wife is just manipulating him with her eyebrows or something. Which are called, what, stringless bows, isn't it? It doesn't work when I do it, does it? I can't manipulate anybody. No. So one could blame the wife, but actually he's attached to enjoying his own senses. And the wife is seen as an object for his sensory enjoyment. So it's not really love, although you hear so many love songs are there. But actually he simply Yadindriya Prithira Pritya Aprinoti. According to Lord Rishabhadev, Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma Yadindriya Pritya Aprinoti. That one who is attached to the sensory enjoyment, he could be manipulated by others, but actually his real interest is to enjoy his own senses. Yadindriya Pritya. Pritya. Just like you have this word Priya. Sometimes the husband is calling the wife Priya, right? And the wife is calling the husband Swami. That's a Vedic system. Did you know that? The wife is not supposed to call the husband by his name. Hey, Joe! Come here! Where's the prasadam? You know, she calls him Swami or Pati. Or Pati Dev, like this. Swami, of course, in that sense means master, not that the husband's a sannyasi. So that would be inappropriate. So Swami, Pati, and the wife is called Priya. So Priya, of course, means dear. So actually, the wife is not dear, it's Indriya Pritya. The senses are dear, not the wife. So he is saying, I love you, I love you. We love you, but actually translating that into what's actually happening, I love my senses, or I love myself, I want to satisfy myself, and you're a good object to satisfy me. So that's really material love, in a nutshell. And actually, Prabhupada said that the only thing that's really close to real love in this world is, the love of a mother for the child. Try to understand that. And I was reading about this in the Vedic literature, is that actually when people go to, I mentioned this before, but when people go to funerals, they're actually crying for themselves. They're not actually crying for the person who departed, except for the mother. If the child goes or leaves the body, then the mother is actually crying for the child. But everyone else is crying because of what they're going to be missing after the person left their body. I mentioned that the other day. Anyway, so therefore that's a griha medi. He's led around by his nose, actually by the senses. And because the senses are so strong, and his attachment to satisfying the senses is so strong, he wastes his human form of life and he gets trapped in the network of material engagement. Of pavarga, working hard, foaming at the mouth. This word pavarga is very interesting. It means material entanglement, but it's been analyzed by the acharyas as working hard, foaming at the mouth, fainting, and ultimately mrityu, maya, fear, all these things are coming out. So this is what our good friend Daksha is advocating. And this is not Krishna consciousness. So Narada Muni's business is to awaken people to Krishna consciousness. Not necessarily to make them all take sannyas. I mean, this is a misunderstanding. I mean, Narada Muni many times doesn't encourage people to take sannyas. I mean, like in the case of Magrari the Hunter. Magrari the Hunter, I think everyone knows that story. Magrari the Hunter was half killing the animals. Narada Muni came across these animals that were half killed, freed some of them, and then he questioned Magrari the Hunter, why are you half killing them? And Magrari the Hunter said, this is our family tradition. This is what we do. And Narada Muni said, better that fully kill the animals rather than half killed, because when they're half killed, they're suffering. So then Narada Muni gave him a display, a virtual reality, a 3D display of what would happen to him if he kept half killing or even killing the animals. And then Magrari decided to basically renounce. And he said to Narada Muni, you know, who's going to take care of me? And Narada Muni said, I'll personally take care of you. I'll make sure that you get enough. And so this particular personality, Magrari, he lived with his wife and family on the banks of the river and worshipped the Tulsi plant and chanted the holy names. And they remained grihasthas at that point. So it's not that Narada Muni is turning everybody into a sannyasi. I mean, sometimes Narada Muni tries to turn people into sannyasis, and he's not successful because he gets overruled. There's that story in the Bhagavatam, later on in the Bhagavatam, you have the story of King, before he became king, of Priya Vrata. You have this word Vrata again, Vrata means vows. So Priya means, of course, dear vow. That's interesting, isn't it? One who has taken a very devotional vow. That's what the name Priya Vrata means. All these names in Sanskrit mean something quite interesting. If you analyze all these names, like even the name of the sage, Durvas means someone with a bad temper. Like you say, who's giving class today? Oh, the sannyasi with a bad temper. You understand? Durvas. So Narada Muni was preaching to Priyavrata, saying, you know, you've got to renounce everything, you've got to take sannyas, like that. And then he was getting ready. He was meditating, really ecstatic. But the Lord had a different plan for him. And so along comes Lord Brahma, who happens to be Narada Muni's spiritual master in our disciplic succession. Lord Brahma is the first preceptor, after Lord Krishna, of course. And Lord Brahma says, we have some service for you, Priyavrata, you're supposed to get married. Narada Muni is just sitting there, he can't say anything. Because when your guru comes and overrides your instruction to your disciple, you have to keep your mouth shut. So Lord Brahma encouraged Priyavrata to get married. Priyavrata did get married, and he accomplished a lot for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And later on, Narada Muni had to reawaken him with his sense of renunciation. So Narada Muni came back and reminded him of all this renunciation, and then Priyavrata renounced everything. So you do see Narada Muni being overruled. You do see Narada Muni actually encouraging people to remain in grihastha life. And in general, Narada Muni is encouraging people to be detached from this world. I mean, there's another story in the Bhagavatam that's told. It's the Chitraketu story. Where Chitraketu was a great personality, but he was very attached to household life. I mean, too attached to household life. So much attached that he had 10 million wives. That's quite a few. 10 million. Why did he have 10 million? Not that he was just so attached to enjoying with a whole bunch of girls. But he wanted to have a son. And each time he tried to have a son, it didn't work, so he had to keep trying 10 million times. He was really, really wanted to have a son, no matter what. And so, 10 million, and finally, this great sage, Angira, came to him, and then he said to Angira, "I want a blessing." Because usually the sannyasis go to the Vyasa's house and they ask for blessings. That's called ashivat. It's a very common thing. You know, I experience that when I go to, especially Indian houses, they always ask, "Please, have a blessing." Okay, ashivat. What type of blessing do you want? And usually I give the blessing, "May you be Krishna conscious." But generally they say, "No, I don't want that blessing." We had that happen several times. They say, "Oh, give us the blessing where we become materially opulent." And I said, "I don't have that in my menu here." Prabhupada hasn't authorized, but so too bad. And sometimes they ask me to bless their cars. You know, they buy a new Mercedes, because they're very rich people. They buy a new Mercedes and bring it to the temple and say, "Maharaj, I'd like to offer this to Krishna." First time it happened, I thought, "Wow, we got a Mercedes for the temple." I said, "This is great." But then after I did the blessing ceremony, I said, "Okay, goodbye." Another time someone asked me to bless gold. They brought these gold coins, you know, 1 ounce gold coins. And they put them in the middle of a fire sacrifice. And while I was doing the fire sacrifice, I was thinking, "Well, this is the best sacrifice I've ever done. Because we're going to get a lot of money after this one." You know, gold coin, 1 ounce, in those days is worth $300, not like what it's worth now. And after that, they said, "No, we just wanted you to purify our gold." And I said, "Thanks a lot." So, many times people approach, the point I'm making is many times people approach the sages for some material benediction. And really, we're not authorized to give material benedictions. We're just authorized to say, you know, "May your mind be in Krishna. Krishna Mati Rastu. May your mind be fixed on Krishna." So this Angira, he was approached by this Chitraketu. And Chitraketu said, "Please bless me to have a son." And he was so materially attached to the idea of having a son that when Angira blessed him to have a son, Angira also said the son is going to be a source of great distress as well as happiness. And so Chitraketu was thinking, "Well, this is normal anyway. Children sometimes cry and you have to change the nappies. It's not a problem. But he'll give me happiness." So Chitraketu didn't understand the import of this particular prediction. So later on, the son was born. And when the son was born, naturally what occurs, also the word mati means envious or jealous. Prabhupada also defines it like that. So naturally what occurred was that the son could only be born from one of the wives. It's not that all 10 million wives gave birth to one son. It doesn't work like that. So the 9,999,999 wives, they were envious of the one wife. I think one wife's name is Kritcha Jyoti, if I remember correctly. Is that right? I don't remember that story. Kritcha Jyoti was the one wife who gave birth to the kid. And so the 9,999,999 wives conspired to kill the one kid. And they poisoned him. And he died. And Chitraketu, when that happened, he just gave completely upset, you know, crying, rolling on the ground. And at that point, Angira came back, but this time with Narada Muni. Because Narada Muni doesn't give blessings that are counterproductive for spiritual life. So, because Narada Muni is meant for preaching renunciation. So, anyway, so he came back with Narada Muni. And Narada Muni gave Chitraketu some interesting instructions about the temporary nature of this life, the temporary nature of all these bodily connections that we have. Sometimes Prabhupada would call the attachments we have to bodily connections, he'd call it like skin disease. It's an interesting statement. Skin disease. You know, sometimes you think skin disease means eczema or something like that, but being attached to different people because of the skin. And Sachidchiketa became a great devotee, and then he went on Sankirtan. He took out a woman's Sankirtan party after. Did you know that? But he didn't get married to any of them. We were talking yesterday about how Rupa got married. He took out someone on Sankirtan, and then he got married to her later on. So anyways, we told the whole story last night. It was very interesting. I said, Rupa, you take her out in Sankirtan, and end up getting married to her. He said, no, Maharaj. Then it happened. So, 6 years later, you know, four kids and two houses. So anyway, Chichiketu, but he's a good grahasta. So Chichiketu took out these ladies in traveling Sankirtan. And of course, we know the story later on, and he got cursed by Parvati, but that's not really part of the story. So, the reason I'm telling that story and talking about, you know, bodily attachment is actually to talk about the duties of a grahasta, because there's grihamedi and also grahasta, the grahasta ashram. It's interesting what, the word ashram doesn't mean where you sleep. You know, so we use that sometimes in this context. Oh, here's the brahmachari ashram. And that means, oh, where the brahmachari sleep. But the word ashram comes from ashraya, which means shelter. Shelter from what? Shelter from the material energy. Not shelter from the rain or the cold or the heat. It means shelter from the maya shakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So grahasta ashram means a place that affords shelter from the material energy. Like brahmachari ashram means a place that affords shelter from the material energy. So if the place where the brahmacharis live is filled with nonsense activities, like the brahmacharis are going back and they're playing, not here of course, and they're playing video games, or they're watching Bollywood, I guess here you wouldn't watch Bollywood movies, none of you from India, so or watching Hollywood movies, then it's not an ashram anymore, it's a grihamedi ashram. Even though you're dressed in saffron. Actually, it's not, like Prabhupada said previously, it's not the color of your clothes that determines whether you're renounced or even, you know, the formal order of life. It's actually your consciousness. I mean, Prabhupada told a story about how there was a neighbor, he had a neighbor when he was young, and he had just gotten married. And the neighbor would dress up in saffron during the day to collect money, or collect whatever he was going to collect. And he'd come back at night and give it all to his wife and change into white. This is Kali Yuga sannyasi. Also it says in the Bhagavatam that in Kali Yuga the grahastas will come begging to the sannyasis for donations. It actually happens sometimes. I mean, like I gave Nisunga Kavacha a projector. He came begging. True story. We're not just making this up. Right, he still uses it. He came back and said, Maharaj, give me your mercy. And I said, do you want to hear about renunciation? No. Give me your projector. So he made me feel so good. Of course, he did such wonderful service in Fiji in helping us open up the Suva temple there. So I felt so guilty I had to give him my projector. This is Kali Yuga, you know. What can we do? And then the GBC is very determined to pass rules about the sannyasi's dakshin. Isn't that the sannyasis are rich in the four temples, they're starving, everyone's starving to death. And sannyasis, they have Mercedes and iPads and everything like that. So if the brahmacharis are acting improperly, it's not an ashram anymore. They're also grihamedis. And if the grahastas are acting properly, then it's an ashram. They're grahastas. They're dedicated to Krishna. So how does a grahasta do that? I mean, it's like their injunctions. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj speaks about ideal family life. It's a very interesting Very interesting chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, there's also instructions, ideal vanaprastha life and ideal sannyas life. Now, there's some details that we don't follow, obviously, because in ideal vanaprastha life, the vanaprastha is not supposed to wear sewn clothing, he's just supposed to wear tree bark. And obviously we don't follow that. And the brahmachari is supposed to wear, does anyone remember? What is a brahmachari supposed to wear?
Deer skin.
Deer skin, right. So, you know, the poor, do you have any deer here?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. What, the pythons ate them all or something? Yeah, I figure that. So the brahmacharis would have to be wearing this deer skin. I mean, it'd be very bad for preaching Krishna consciousness if you were going out. I mean, you have to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. Like you probably shouldn't be wearing shoes either. So you go out in Sankirtan without shoes and wearing deer skin. We definitely have trouble being called a cult if that was the case. And it's bad enough we wear bed sheets. Yeah, bed sheets. So, but there's general descriptions. Like in the Vedic injunctions, there's details and principles. This is actually a very important point. Details means things that can be adjusted, you know, how you dress. Principles are things like chanting the holy names, following the four regulative principles, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, worshipping the deity form, is a principle. The details, Prabhupada said, what the details that may be applicable in India may not be applicable in the Western world. This is from Prabhupada's book. So things have to be adjusted, like things in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, for example. There's so many injunctions that we may not follow because those details were there for ritualistic brahmas. We're not supposed to eat carrots, for example, according to Hari Bhakti Vilas. And, you know, we certainly do eat carrots. Prabhupada himself cooked carrots, and he liked carrots. Carrot halwa, on a Kadasi preparation. So there's details and there's essential things. So what are the essential things for the Grahastha Ashram? Because one of the essential things is he should find a wife to be a Grahastha. That's obviously essential. I mean, we don't really advocate a man finding another man to be a Grahastha. Although we're very compassionate. I mean, obviously, if people say, you know, I'm very attached, I want to make friendship without breaking the regular principles, to someone of the same sex, well, you know, make friendship. So we don't denigrate people who have some other propensities. But really, Grahastha Ashram means the opposite sex. That's the first essential item. Remember that. Then if you get married, get married to the opposite sex. So, I know it's not, you know, nowadays, I mean, may get arrested in certain countries for speaking like that, right? Is it illegal here in Australia?
We won't
do that. Okay. So, I'll have to erase that on the recording. So, but that's essential. But joking aside, there's other essential items mentioned. First essential item is hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. What does that mean? That the Grahastha should regularly have kirtan. Prabhupada said kirtan in his home and invite his friends and chant the holy names. I mean, shravanam is the most important. Shravanam, kirtanam, the two most important things. And therefore, the Grahastha should make arrangements so these things go on. And now I often speak about this, but utilizing modern technology, it's actually quite easy. You can have these, you know, iPhones or iPads or MP3 players or whatever, and have transcendental sound going all the time. I mean, why do you need to just have silence in the house? Of course, usually it's not silence, usually there's an argument between husband and wife. But besides that, that's normal. Prabhupada said it's like thunder and lightning without clouds or something. It's like even Gandhi, he said, kicked his wife out of the house. But then he let her back in after a few hours. So, we should make some arrangements so we're hearing constantly. I mean, even if you have to work a job, or go somewhere, or drive somewhere, then listen to Krishna Katha all the time. There's so many audio books you can get. Audio books means Krishna conscious audio books. like this has been recorded, the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all these things are available. I mean, not only for grahasthas, but for brahmacharis too, for anyone, for ladies, men. And you listen. All day long can be filled with Krishna Katha, practically speaking, no matter what your ashram is. So that's the first point. Hearing and chanting. Now, there are other specific injunctions given for grahasthas, such as considering all living entities to be like your children. This is right, even the Bhagavatam, this is a heavy one, that even the bugs should be considered, you know, given, not that you make little beds for the bugs, okay? Bed bugs, you know. that would be crazy. You know, here's a little bit. Now go to sleep, my dear little cockroach. Obviously, that would be stupid. But you have a consciousness that they're all dear to Krishna. Because that's to counteract the consciousness of the skin disease. That those people who have some physical, bodily, genetic relationship to me, they're mine. But to see, yastu sarvani bhutani atmana ivana pashati, sarva bhuteshu chatmana, according to the Upanishad, to see that every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, and they're all my relatives, like that. So that's another important point, as far as grahasas. Another important point is inviting guests over regularly. Like Prabhupada, one time there was someone who just got married, asked Prabhupada the question, what's a grahasta's duty? Now, he wanted the answer insofar as intimate relationships. You know, that was his intention when he was asking Prabhupada. But Prabhupada replied in a way that was quite interesting. Prabhupada said, before you eat, you know, you call out, you know, if anyone's hungry, let them come and eat. And you call that out several times. And then if anyone comes, then you feed them. Like that. Prabhupada's father would regularly have so many guests over. And even some of them were a little bogus. There are some bogus sannyasis who smoke marijuana. And the father would, I'm not saying you should do this, but the father would even arrange to purchase marijuana for them. Don't do that. Don't imitate that. And I was just listening, this morning, I was listening to Chaitanya Bhagavat, how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one time had 20 sannyasis visit his house simultaneously. I mean, that's pretty heavy, 20 sannyasis show up. I mean, what are you going to do? And Mother Sachi was very worried about the whole thing, but Lord Chaitanya's wife, Lakshmi Priya, because she's the goddess of fortune, so she arranged everything, serving the sannyasis nicely. And Lord Chaitanya, even before he exhibited his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was very attentive to receiving the guests. I mean, it's described, he went around, and the Chaitanya Bhagavat describes it, went around to every single guest, did you get enough to eat? Is everything alright? He washed their hands, he washed their feet, as an ideal grahasta. So you see, this is actually very, very important too. And then also, whatever, for grahasta, to eat, whatever you eat should be prasadam. Now that sounds a little funny. But sometimes people become so loose that they don't. I mean, they eat in so many different restaurants that, because of it, Krishna conscious restaurants are right. But if you eat food cooked by non-devotees, even if you're a grahasta, your mind becomes wicked, right? Because you absorb the consciousness of the person you're cooking, that's doing the cooking. So this is very important. For brahmacharis, obviously, too. It's not the brahmacharis should go to the restaurants or sannyasi should go to restaurants. I mean, personally, what I observe is I don't eat anything unless I know who's doing the cooking. I observe that wherever I go in the world. I have to know the cook. And I know, not simply know them, but know that they're kosher. Kosher? You know that word? And that word means, like, they're all right, let's talk about it. Okay, let's use a Hindi word, paka. They're cool. So they're bona fide. Bona fide, at least following, you know, at least one of the four regulated principles. No, all four regulated principles. And then, so that's very important for grahasta. You know, it's not that you've given a license. Yeah, I have this license. I can just eat any damn thing. Like Prabhupada said that. He said, my disciples will eat any damn thing. It doesn't move. And didn't move before, you know. So it's like that. It's just like, wow. But that would probably was saying that sarcastically. So we should be very careful what we eat, because even we have the case of Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, Kripacharya's consciousness becoming polluted because they ate in the kitchen of Duryodhana. And Krishna, when he went to try to make peace between the Pandavas and Kurus, refused to take any prasadam or any food from Duryodhana. And then he went to, does anybody remember who he went to? Whose house did he eat at? Vidura's house. And what did he eat there?
Banana peel?
And just porridge. It's described, he relished the porridge. You know what porridge is? Just like oats, you know, it's just simple oat preparation. He relished it because it was offered in devotion. So that's very important. And it's also mentioned in the seventh canto of Brahmasutra should regularly offer prasadam to others. If they're ritualistic, they can offer to the forefathers. And they should also do deity worship. Come to the temple. Not that everybody should have their own deities in general. They should worship the deities in the temple here. Prabhupada, you know, I know there's some exceptions, but in general, Prabhupada wanted the devotees to concentrate on the ISKCON deities. You're so close to the deities. Come and worship the deities. And then we would have no problem with pujaris in the Hare Krishna movement, isn't it? One of the reasons we have so many problems finding pujaris, I mean, even in one big community in the United States, Alachua, they have hundreds of devotees who are second initiated. But they have to import pujaris from India. It's wild, isn't it? It's wild to think, if you think about it. Because Prabhupada said the first class grahasta will worship the deity in the temple. And if someone is living some distance away, yeah, like 2,000 kilometers away in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, in, what is some island community? Where?
Easter Island.
Easter Island or something like that, or Tahiti. Then, yeah, sure, go ahead. Have your deities. But in general, Prabhupada, I mean, obviously you can have some deities, I'm not criticizing devotees of deities, but the main focus should be on the deities in the ISKCON temple. Because this gives us the sangha of the devotees and the service to the mission of His Divine Grace of the Prabhupada, isn't it? And then the deities would be served so opulently. What do you think, Mr. Ingrabhacha? Okay. I do. I mean, it's just, the deities would be served so nicely in every center if people concentrated on the deities as the lords of that particular area, actually the lord of everything, you know, Jagannath, he's the lord of the universe, the lord of all the universes. So that's very important for the grahasthas. You know, the deity worship, you serve the deities. And the deities in the ISKCON temples are meant for preaching because people come see the deities, want to become devotees. So that's another important thing. And then the final thing mentioned in the seventh canto is the grahasthas should make their home a holy place and also, if possible, visit the holy places. And the holy places means the ISKCON temples, because Prabhupada said the ISKCON temples are all Vaikuntha. They're holy places. This is a holy place. This place here is as good as Govardhan. Did you know that? It's as good as Govardhan. Because it's manifest by the Prabhupada's mercy. You're manifest in Govardhan. It's like the embassy of a particular country. There's like this Mr. Snowden. Anyone's heard of his name? No. Anyway, he was working for the NSA in America, and he actually revealed some of the secrets of the spies. I'm sure none of you watch the news like I do. So, but he took shelter in an embassy. Because the embassy of a particular country is that particular country, not where it is. In other words, let's say you have the Russian embassy here in Australia, then when you go to the Russian embassy, the rules and regulations of the Russian embassy apply within that embassy. And if you want to escape from the police in Australia, you can go into the Russian embassy. Because they can't go in and capture you. So in the same way, these temples, the Hare Krishna temples, those that are authorized, are just as good as the spiritual world. This is the spiritual world. That's the same Krishna. You know, I say that often to people. They say, well, I have to go to Vrindavan to get rejuvenated. Well, you are in Vrindavan. Is that a different Krishna in Vrindavan than the Krishna here? I don't think so. Is it? Same Krishna. So you can take show. This is the holy place. Go on pilgrimage. Go, like here especially, you have this nice Govardhan Parikrama. You know, why do you have to spend money to go to India? You can just go around Govardhan and just remember, because when, it's not simply the walking process, it's the remembrance. To evoke remembrance of the Supreme Lord and His pastimes. So this is important. So for grahasthas, very important principle, brahmacharis also. So anyway, so Daksha was not really a full-fledged grahastha. He was, as he describes here, he describes himself in this purport, in this verse, as a grihimedi. It means he's saying basically, I'm tied up by the nose. Inadvertently, he's criticizing himself. So any questions or comments? Why? There's so many nice devotees here. All you need is one nice devotee. Yeah, no, I mean, of course, I go to the holy place, I go to Govardhan, I like staying there. But more than anything, it's just, if I can find one nice devotee to associate with, I don't need 10,000. It gets a little bewildering, you know, if you try to associate with all 10,000. I don't know, I find it enlivening wherever I go. I mean, mainly I go to Govardhan because it's so quiet and peaceful, and I can take people around, and, you know, get away from my normal management service, which is nice. But just to prove it, he stayed some time with us in Govardhan. It was nice, but, you know, to get away from where you're normally doing management is a good idea sometimes. You know, just, you need a break. I mean, if I go to the temples where I'm not directly managing or in charge of the GBC, there's a little bit of tension there. What are they doing wrong? I like coming here because I don't have to worry about anything. I'm not in charge. It's nice not to be in charge, isn't it, sometimes? Brahmanas, yeah. Own the place, yeah. Anyway, so... I'm just enlivened. I tell you, what really enlivens me more than anything else is hearing Krishna Katha. Like I said, this morning I was listening to the Chaitanya Bhagavat as I was doing my Devi Puja. Rupa can attest to that. He was chanting. And I was doing my puja, because I have Govardhan Shiva. And I was listening to Chaitanya Bhagavat, and I'm enlivened. And I don't know, when I listen to that, I'm with Lord Chaitanya. And don't you experience that? Yeah. I mean, you listen intently to Krishna Katha. Asatam prasangam namavirya samgarava vanti vikamira sanyo katha. Then you're there, you're transported. I mean, that's my experience when I listen to some really good Krishna Katha, you know, bona fide Krishna Katha. Of course, I don't listen to unbona fide Krishna Katha. Then it's the consciousness, wherever I am, the consciousness is transported. No, I was just there in Rupa's house and just listening to the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning, right? And I was thinking, wow, Lord Chaitanya, such a nice story. You know, the story about Lord Chaitanya receiving 20 sannyasis. And then yesterday, 2 days ago, I heard about Lord Nityananda kicking all the Buddhists. You know, Lord Nityananda went to some Buddhists and they wouldn't talk to him. And he just got angry and he just kicked them off and chased them all away. So there's humor there. I mean, it's just so wonderful. I mean, we have a vast treasure of Krishna Katha that we should just take advantage of. And life is so blissful then. You didn't forget about all your sorrows. You know, there's problems in the world, yes. Some people don't like you. Some people love you. Some people hate you. right? You have problems with money. You have problems from other living entities. Problems from your own body. But you listen to Krishna Katha, Bhavo Shudha Shrotra, Mano Virama. Kautama Shloka Gunanibhava, Nivritatar Shar Gubhima, Upagiyamana, as described by the Bhagavatam. Okay, any other questions? Good questions. Yes. Yes. Yeah, obviously we should go to Vrindavan. I'm not advocating that everybody doesn't go to India, but I go to India on a regular basis. However, we should see the non-different nature of the temple here. We should understand, we can take shelter here. You can communicate with the deities. When I first joined the movement, every week the devotees would go before the deities. We had this regular program. And they would reveal their minds before Krishna. They would have communication. And basically, it was a wonderful ceremony. Like every devotee, we had a kirtan, every devotee would come up and say the deity. So let's recognize the non-different nature. Yes, we go to the holy nun. Prabhupada wanted us to. One of the main reasons is to keep the unity of the movement together, to realize that we're not just a local branch or a local temple, but to realize, see where we fit in with the whole society. You know, to interact with each other. Yes, I mean, I agree. I didn't want to give the impression we shouldn't go to the holy nun. But, you know, of course, but I experience just as much ecstasy seeing the deities here as I do when I go to Vrindavan. I mean, I experience the same nectar, I mean, as when I see Radha Shyam in Vrindavan. And there's a Govardhan there. I look at Govardhan there. Well, that's a big Shila. Of course, the biggest Govardhan Shila is in Texas. Is in Houston, Texas. I was with Tamal Krishnamaraj one time in Houston, Texas. It's a funny story. And we were greeting the deities in the temple in Houston. And curtains open up. And this is the first time I saw the Shila and Nilamata of the deities there. And I said, wow, they're big. And Tamal Krishnamar said, everything's bigger in Texas. So yes, we should visit the Holy Town whenever possible. Because Prabhupada wanted us to visit and interact with each other. So we, and also another thing Prabhupada said about the Holy Town is the devotee, he didn't want the devotees so much going on, like personal curriculums. He wanted them to go with groups of devotees when they went to the Holy Town, because there's so much danger in the Holy Town too. As we've experienced, some devotees get misled by the Babaji's or some other thing that occurs there. Thank you for clarifying that. So, any other question? Yeah. That's true.
Outside waiting for Prabhupada to walk past, our Prabhupada to come and take darshan. So the
Yes. Good point. Good point. See, I didn't want to say that people shouldn't have deities, but the main focus should be on the deities of the temple. And we don't want to be diverted from the deities of the temple. We want to put our attention. Another thing you said was about going to the holy places to buy gopi fruits. I've never done that, but... but probably... I'm just joking. I'll follow up on what you said, that Prabhupada actually said something very funny. He said, Krishna is everywhere in Vrindavan, but he's not in Loy Bazaar. You understand what I mean. Loy Bazaar is the shopping place that you find every devotee going there. So certainly, yes, we should buy devotional clothes. And I can put an advertisement out for my good friend at Gangotri. Go shopping at Gangotri. So, because he's my friend. So, but we shouldn't spend all of our time doing that. Then you can go once, you know, can I have 20 devotees? Okay. We'll pick them up tomorrow. But not every day. Yeah, thank you for that, point. So any other questions? Yes, Rupa.
Raj, you mentioned the story of Chitraketu and how the love for the mother has for the child, or the parents have for the child, is like the closest thing to love for Krishna. I was listening to a lecture by Tamal Krishnaraj, and he was talking to some devotees in Dallas, and their names are Radha Vinod and Indra Nila. And Indra Nila, she was like a big book distributor for many, many years, and they got married and had a child. She was telling Lord Krishnaraj that she couldn't believe the attachment when she had the child. She couldn't believe the attachment. It was so strong. She felt that attachment for the child was more dear than her own life.
Very interesting. It's true. It's true. I mean, I've experienced that too. Not as I'm not a mother. But my mother is like that with me. She keeps my baby shoes there. Can you imagine? You know, I don't have any disciples who are so devoted as my mother. And even when I want something from her, it's really easy to get it. I call her up and first thing she says is, get a job. But then all I have to do is say, use the magic word, mommy. You know, imagine a 64-year-old person saying, mommy. But it works. I just say, but mommy. And she melts and she says, right, what do you want? And she paid for a house for me. She pays my medical insurance, everything, just because I say mommy. Hopefully she's not listening. She doesn't know how to go on the internet, so it's no problem. So, any other questions or comments? Yes. Actually, a number of years ago, I wrote an article like that, Love Yourself. I don't know if any of you read that article. It was on Dunderbutts, and I got very much criticized for it. I don't know if anyone read that article. It was very popular. And yes, we have to love ourselves, but it's important to understand what ourselves are. Like if you just try to satisfy your senses, you're not actually loving yourself. But we should take care of our basic necessities. It's not that devotees should neglect their basic necessities. Beginning with, of course, air, food, light, and also friendship and loving exchanges, social interaction, autonomy. These are all basic needs that each one of us has. And yes, it's important to be attentive to those. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that point up. That was good. Okay, any other questions or arguments or problems or issues? Discussions? Anger? Yeah, Paul.
Can we conclude that if we don't have any desire at all to go to India, that is not an offense? It's 20 years since you went to India. When are you going?
It's not an offense. No, it's not an offense. I mean, we should be thinking of our experiences. What I do is, personally, when I'm not in India, it's not India per se, it's the Holy Dhamma. When I'm not there, I actually meditate on my remembrances of the Holy Dhamma. So it's really important to have some memories and to reinforce those memories. It's not going to India per se, but it's to have those memories that you can contemplate, you know, remember. Like I remember Govardhan all the time. Because, you know, I spend a lot of time there. So, yes, it's not absolutely necessary. And there have been great personalities in our Sampradaya who have never gone to Vrindavan. You know, that may come as a shock. But they have Vrindavan in their hearts. It's manifest in the hearts. And through sound vibration, then the Holy Dhamma becomes manifest through sound vibration. That's my experience. Sound vibration and also, I mean, this is the Holy Dhamma. I don't feel any different here than I do in Krishna Bhavani Mandir. I'm just telling you the truth. I mean, a beautiful deity here, they're being worshipped so nicely. That's the same Krishna, plain as blue. Right?
There's a thing in the Melbourne Temple. Yeah.
Yeah, it's non-different from Vrindavan. This is such a wonderful place. I mean, the way everything is taken care of, there's one advantage too. There's not people throwing dirt all over the place, isn't it? You have garbage pails here. No, but I always go to Vrindavan and all these places too. It's not absolutely necessary. If you're absorbed in transcendental sound, the holy name. Namachintamani, Krishna, Chaitanya, Rasa, Vigra. Everything is there in the holy name. I mean, even if you can't go to a temple for some reason, if you're absorbing Krishna's name, you can go back to Godhead. That's Vrindavan. Vrindavan is there in the name. Yeah.
I feel like Pakistan near Fight Site, Texas, or something. It's kind of like, I feel really a whole lot more Krishna conscious.
All right, then we ask why.
I don't
know. Perhaps because there's many things here that remind you of your previous life. Many things, like you're living in Australia. You were born in Australia, right? Where were you born?
Poland.
So there's some things here. I mean, let's say if I'm surrounded by things that I'm very attached to, like my computer and everything like that. Sannyasi bona fide attachments, right? Computer, iPod. Then it diverts my mind away from Krishna. So when I go to Govardhan, usually I don't go around Govardhan with my iPod or iPad or whatever. Because it could get stolen. So that's the main reason. So then I'm not engaged in my normal management services and things like that, so it actually allows me to focus more on Krishna. I think there's various reasons, but My experience is that I can be just as Krishna conscious here as I can in Mayapur or Vrindavan or Govardhan, because I mean, where are we? We're in the spiritual world right now. You may not realize it, but we are in the spiritual world.
Yeah, I understand that, but yeah, but to me, that's what's happening. Right?
Yeah, so, but another point is when you go to the Holy Dham, your life is more focused just on hearing and chanting and spiritual activities, which is good too. So, I mean, there's an advantage. Like, you're here in the West, and you have so many other duties that you have to execute. You know, family members may call you. Of course, you're from Poland, so it's different. Or you have many responsibilities. It's good to go to a place where you don't have any responsibilities for some time.
You know, actually, all my responsibilities
are focused around service. That's nice. So, you have a perfect life. So, you should work on seeing this place as non-different than Vrindavan, in my opinion. I mean, just one interesting thing about Vrindavan. When I go to Vrindavan, they don't allow me to chant Hare Krishna there. What do I mean? Because wherever, if I go near the temple, everybody wants to talk to me. So as soon as I pick out my D-bag, Hare Krishna, oh Maharaj, I have this problem. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know. So when I go to Govardhan, nobody talks to me because there's nobody there that I know. And they all speak Hindi anyway, so it's not a problem. So, yes, Vaishnavi. Wonderful example. Wonderful example. He decided he could have gone to India. He certainly had the resources. But he wanted to show how to leave the body and also that Gita Nagari, or the holy place established by Srila Prabhupada, is non-different than the Holy Dham. Good. Thank you. Okay. I think we should end now. It's time for prasadam, because in the Holy Dham they do eat prasadam. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.